All right, hello and welcome to Classic Black Dude, another fantastic day of recording here with your host Clark Jones, aka Posh Strickland. Very excited. It's a lot of Black Dude news going on right now. We have a big donation to my alma mater, Morehouse College, only Black male college in America, based in Atlanta. 13 milli from Oprah, the Oprah Winfrey. I'm surprised the name Oprah hasn't really taken off as a name, like Michael or like Jesus. You know, Oprah is not like, she's the only Oprah I know. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe she said something about it on the show, like, don't name your kids Oprah after me. I want to be the only one. I wouldn't be surprised by that. Will Smith is in another movie. Shout out to my man Rallo, who said Will Smith is starring and co-starring in the same movie. And on a serious note, man, this Dallas thing. As you know, Amber Geiger, white police officer who shot my brother, Haitian brother, in Dallas. She was sentenced to 10 years, and it's been a big outcry because the judge gave her a hug, Jean Botham's brother gave her a hug, and the bailiff, a black lady, was doing her hair, like stroking her hair. I don't know if that even comforts people, but the optics on it was bad. And I don't know. I've been trying to figure out the bottom of it. The judge appeared on the show recently talking about if she was a black woman, I wouldn't get this outcry. And the collective response from Black Twitter was duh. Also, there was a conspiracy that, like, Jean Botham's family is from Haiti and that they were putting a root on Amber Geiger when they were giving her a hug. I don't know if that's true. I wish it was. I wish they were really putting a hex. I mean, 10 years is not enough time, obviously, but 10 days for a police officer, especially one convicted of murder, is rough. So I don't know how that's going to go, but it's a really, really a sad time. Really a lot of crazy things going on, which is perfect because we have a white woman in the studio.
Wow.
My first white woman guest on Classic Black Dude. And I was like, yo, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. Like, I'm going to do somebody I know so we can talk comfortably. And I asked her before the show, can she talk on behalf of all white women? And she happily agreed. I know that's not easy, especially in 2019, in today's climate, with everything going on. Shout out to the Santa Ana fires. They knew we was doing a podcast today. They knew it was going to be flames. So everything in the valley is kind of like 70 miles per hour flames, but we just trying to keep it going. Hello and welcome, Megan Gailey.
Hi.
Hi. Do I have a good radio voice? Did I switch it on?
Oh, no, I think you have a great radio
voice. Thank you so much.
I almost like wish you hadn't said I was white and then let everyone just listen to my voice and name and go.
They would have known.
Okay.
They would have known right away.
First ever.
The first one. And we're thinking about, we haven't even released, I don't know.
We're banking
say that,
them right
yeah,
now.
We're banking them. We got to have some in the bank. That's how it works.
People
got to
know. People got to learn the podcast system.
I travel. I'm giving all the insidery tips here on Classic Black Dude. We don't have enough black podcasters. The biggest black podcast was The Champs, and it was hosted by two white dudes, and they would just have black guests on. But this time, a black dude is behind.
Did you listen to Jemele Hill's podcast?
That's tough for me to talk about, only because, look, okay, Jemele had a lot to say about Jay-Z and the NFL thing and the Colin mm-hmm. Kaepernick thing, and I'm not against Colin Kaepernick.
Mm-hmm.
I think what he did is he brought a lot of attention to an issue with police brutality, which I'm obviously against, but he lost me when he started talking about he don't vote. That bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
And because, here's why, because people think voting is just for president, and it's not. Like, voting for president might not mean anything, but, and we're going to have Colin on the show one day.
Okay.
As soon as we cross 500 downloads.
Sometimes this happens in activism or people that are sort of like the face of a revolution. If you go a lot deeper, you're like, you sort of have to like take them for their face value and what they can provide.
Absolutely.
And then not like dig into who they are on a personal level.
But
in
I
some
feel like
ways
that's all set up because it's intentional to attach a person to a movement.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if you can make the person imperfect, which we already are,
yes,
then that's how you take down
exactly
the movement, which is what's happening with Sean King and D-Ray right now. And I went to school with Sean King. I love him, but it shouldn't be a person tied to Black Lives Matter.
Because we make mistakes.
Because we're awful.
Yeah.
As a collective mm-hmm. society. And then it's like, okay, who's the face? Who's the face? And then we go after that person.
Yeah, you really don't want to be the face of something.
Nobody should. It's horrible for any movement. Feminist movement, Black Lives Matter, whatever the movement is, as soon as you attach a person to it and that person gets built up, mm-hmm. which is also intentional. Like, mm-hmm. this is the person. Everybody knows this is the person.
I mean, so, this happened to Jesus.
He wasn't even a Paul was the Christianity. He created
it. Well, but he was trying. He was Jesus, like, hello.
But Jesus was the face. Like, Paul is all the black women associated with Black Lives Matter, and Jesus is Sean King.
Yeah.
That's the only context I'll ever say anything like that. Yeah. But that's essentially what it was. He gets all the credit for it. But a lot of good friends of mine were in Ferguson first, and you just don't know their name. I can't even, my homegirl Ashley Yates, that's one, but it's many. Even with, what was the thing with Time Magazine? Where they did all the women and the woman who actually came up with Me Too
was not a part of it.
No, we don't even know.
It was a pretty whitewashed cover.
Absolutely. Yeah. Alyssa Milano, like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Tony Danza, fake daughter.
I remember seeing her sitting behind Dr. Ford.
I haven't seen her
at the Senate hearing, and I was like, we can really see her. Like,
she was mugging too. She was like making faces for the camera. Is that celebrity? Ooh. But you're a celebrity.
No.
Do you?
Incorrect.
You don't have any, you know, you've been in a commercial. I've seen you in the back of an airport seat for the nuts.
I don't know if that, like, then the barometer for celebrity is so low now.
Okay, with Twitter and...
Yeah, because then it's... Gosh, I had people really attacking me last week over Joker. And
you did... That was you. You.
I did not!
You didn't want any of that smoke?
I did not know that... I truly didn't... I thought I was not speaking to them, to their leader. I was just saying, as a film, this is bad. This is
a bad
film.
Most people said it kind of... I haven't seen it yet. I just saw Infinity Wars.
It's really bad. And I think you should watch it because I think... The director and the way they tell the story, the treatment of women of color in particular, is disgusting.
Well, I heard... Okay, so I don't want to give away too much of the movie, but you should have seen it.
Spoiler, he's a clown.
If this comes out after Halloween, you haven't seen it, then you don't care anyway. But I heard that his girlfriend is a black woman and she's cool, right?
Yes, but she's also like not his girlfriend. It's one of those... Well, you know he's a stand-up comedian.
Supposedly.
Yeah, so that was like, well, I didn't know that. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm sitting in the theater a little high, and it's sort of revealed 10 minutes in, and I'm with CJ, my fiance, and then our other friend. And when it's revealed that he is going to pursue stand-up comedy.
Wait, what race is your other friend?
Wait.
Okay, so two white women and a Filipino man.
A white woman. A white woman always has to travel with a white man. To go to the movies. And then if you can, you try and bring a Filipino man.
Just for balance.
And so I like it was revealed at one point he's like, well, you know, I'm trying to be a comedian. And I looked to both of them and I was like, we have to go. Like, I can't watch this because these men have been trying to do things to me for debt. Like, I just like was like, I can't see this man martyred on screen.
Yeah. Was he the hero? Was he the anti-hero?
I think he is victimized in a way that's really not good.
I just don't think, I don't like to watch my friends perform stand-up.
Yeah.
Because it hurts me to see a friend not do well on stage.
Yeah.
Like, I'll walk out of there and I want to support, but I also do that thing where a joke bombs, I laugh really hard. And it's just a tick that I laugh the loudest in the room, which isn't hard because everybody else is silent. It's just funny to me to see someone try and fail. I don't want to do that.
And then to go on a killing spree.
And it's always
because
possible.
It's like, honey, we've all bombed in way bigger settings than you're going through.
And then there's this desire to pushing the limit. Mm-hmm. I know that you've heard that phrase mm-hmm. too many times in the past 2 weeks, but also do what no one else is doing. So I would hate to see someone just, I don't know, like lash out and hurt the crowd because nobody's done that yet. No comic has really hurt an audience. They've been, had thrown chairs at them. I've seen comedians attacked.
And they've hurt us with their jokes.
They've hurt us with wasting our time.
Their time will never. Do you ever think about the amount of time we've spent watching comedy?
At least 10,000 hours.
That's terrible, and that's also like toxic. Not even because it's like, but just like, I have to like, the thoughts are all, and like mine is in there too. I'm not saying I haven't done that for other people.
And it comes out. This is why it's also hard for me to watch, because like who you are when you're bombing is who you are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I would hate for that to come out. Like I've seen comics who are not shitty. Shout out to Joe McAdam. He was like, can we just start calling problematic shitty? And I totally agree with that. Like just I've seen comics become shitty on stage. I know they're not typically like that. Speaking of shitty, we go back far, you and I. We should give some base on that. To Chicago days, I started in like 2009, and I think that's when
I started.
Yeah,
that's when I moved there.
And you had the teal headshot with the hair sweep.
People still use that photo. And
it's
like,
a good photo.
Guys, there's Getty Images. Like, what are we?
The hair was swept perfectly in this photo. And I hadn't met you yet, but I just kept seeing you booked on shows with this photo. And so I was working both sides of town. And like literally Chicago's like Joker and Dolomite. So Dolomite was the South Side and Joker was the North Side comedy scene. And I would, along some other comedians, would work both sides. You as well. You were at Jokes and Notes getting booked.
Yeah, I loved Jokes and Notes.
How would you describe it, that environment going in there?
It was, because there was a difference between going Wednesday to go to the open mic.
Yes.
Because Wednesday, that's sort of how you would try and get seen by Mary. Mm-hmm. And there would be sometimes a pack of, you know, hoodie wearing white boys that would come.
I thought you were going to say something.
No. I'm talking about
hoodie
like
hoodie wearing Skittles.
No. I'm like, that's what's so I'm like, I mean, some of the scariest men I've ever seen are white men in hoodies. So.
Right now. Yeah, for sure.
These are my friends. And so there would be like a pack. And I remember being like, oh, cool. Cause I was like, I don't want to be lumped in with them.
Yeah.
And so the Wednesday mic, I mean, the thing about Jokes and Notes is like, killing there felt better than anything I've probably ever felt in my life.
Right? Yeah. They let you know that you were fucking destroying.
Yeah, but bombing there also felt worse than maybe anything you could feel.
If the Joker movie had a DJ playing him off for bombing, I would definitely go see it tonight. If they had someone playing, someone please call 911. That was what they would play at Jokes and Notes if you bombed.
I remember one of the first times I was down there, though, somebody came up to me afterwards and they were like, I love that Megan character. Like, they thought that I was doing...
Which is a character now.
And I'm like, oh, no.
Because Megan is the new whatever go-to name. Becky. Megan is... Have you noticed that? Does that bother you?
I did a joke about it on Conan, how Megan is like a classically, white name.
But you are also from Indiana, but you didn't. Is that an upbringing thing, or is it just a you thing that you're able to go into these different spaces?
It's an upbringing thing, like 1,000%. My parents are not from Indiana, and so they both were born and raised in New York, not New York City, but upstate New York, and my mom's family was Democrats. Like, and if you're a New York Democrat and you move to Indiana, you're like, what the fuck is going on?
Right.
And my dad was raised as a New York Republican, and still you're going to go to Indiana and be like, oh,
this is a different kind of
a different book than I am.
It's scary, these places in the Midwest that, like, want to be the South so fucking bad.
Like, I'm like, we were free. We were the North.
But it's, we don't know.
North, and we want to be the South in such a strange.
It's like Dave Chappelle's old joke, like the white dude who hangs around a bunch of black guys who are dangerous or whatever, that's the scariest dude in that group because he's trying to prove so hard. So like, I'm more nervous in St. Louis than Mobile, Alabama, right? Because they're like, look, They're like, we were segregated. That's just kind of the way it was or is sometimes. Some of them really don't have anything against black folks. It's just, that's the way it's been. But St. Louis is like, we need to be like that. You know what I mean? Like, they're looking, people looking for an identity are very dangerous.
And when we would, my high school was extremely, and this was by design, and I think there's people that look back on it and don't like it. I loved going to a school that was racially and economically very, very diverse.
Oh, it was very diverse.
Yeah, absolutely.
What type of numbers are we talking?
I would say probably 60 white, 35 black.
Okay.
5 Hispanic, Asian, you know.
Pacific Islander. That was always on the test question.
It may have even been less than that. I don't think it was more than 60% white, though.
And what city was it?
Indianapolis.
Indianapolis is black as fuck.
Yeah, and so, I mean, the Circle City Classic.
Black Expo. Oh, man, that is so, it's so many, what kind of car is it? Just every classic.
Oh,
Impala,
yeah.
Like the car clubs. Did you still do the Black Expo?
I think it's like changed shape a little bit, but I was back in town like 2 years ago and it was still happening because Circle City Classic is during the fall because it's historically black college football. Yeah. And then Black Expo is like end of spring, summer.
Yeah, I remember it being nice the time that it went. It was
and
nice
there would
out.
Be classic cars and we would
Monte
like-
Carlos, that's what it is. It's so many Monte Carlos. And just like, oh man, just think of any like hood box Chevy with the trunk rattling. It's just like, it's peak blackness as the term has been used before. It's just a thing you got to go to, man. Like that and HBCU homecomings are important. Have you ever been to an HBCU?
I have not. No, I've been like on campus.
Oh, okay.
But I haven't ever like been to a game. I mean, and when Circle City Classic would be in town, we would go downtown. There were definitely parents that were like, you're not going downtown this weekend.
Just avoid it.
My parents were like, whatever.
She's
got
to learn.
Yeah. And so we would go, I would go down with my friends and like we would drive around and I can remember being in my friend Lindsay's Corolla and we were on Monument Circle, which is where all the cars are parking and like have, and just, you know, and there's hydraulics and there's, you know, it's blowing our little white minds. And we would drive around and we were just loving it. Like,
that's
we
awesome.
Were like, this is so cool. But when we would, when my school would travel, because I played golf and tennis in high school.
Okay.
I know it's
no volleyball?
No volleyball.
No track?
No. Listen, golf and tennis are lifelong sports and I wanted to be able to play forever. And there were girls on, our best golfer was a black girl. Mm. And we had girls on the tennis team. And we would go to other schools and our football team was very, very good. Our track team was good. Our basketball team was good. And we would go to schools outside of Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And there were cities that we would go to that we would have to have a police escort in and out of town because the towns were known as like Klan seeds.
Like where?
Martinsville, Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
His rumor, you know, there's this urban legend that a former Klan leader is buried beneath the football stadium. And so I actually won my first varsity tennis match there and it felt so fucking good. I mean, I just was like, yeah, fuck you, hillbillies. Yeah. And there would be this, you know, my mom would be like, if you see one candle in a window, that's like a Klan house. And you were sort of taught to like, I remember driving from Indy to Bloomington once and I had two guy friends in the car and they were both black. And then there were like three girls,
dangerous.
One black, two white. And we like stopped at a Taco Bell and they were like, oh, fuck, we can't keep going. And we like had to not go pee because this town just was not gonna be nice. And one of the boys in the car was Mr. Football. He was like the best high school football player in the state. And he was like, keep driving.
Just can't do it.
No.
It's funny. Like, I'm gonna be frank. Like, white people love dog whistling, where it's just like, nobody wants to stop being racist. Nobody wants to seem like they're racist. Like, the racism is fine, but just don't know that we're being racist. You know what I mean? That's when it's like, oh no, everybody just overusing that word. And is it going too far? This was the big thing with comedians and saying the wrong things. Can you be playfully racist now as a comedian? Because you toy with it.
I toy the line. There's times where I'm like, am I marrying a man of color just so I have this like whole new set of jokes to do?
Yeah.
But I guess like there are times too where it's like, well, this, I would like to talk about our privilege, and right. to do that, I sort of have to talk about uncomfortable topics. But there is definitely a line, and when people say to me that I've crossed it, I listen to them and do try and understand. I mean, I used to be very insensitive to Asian people's feelings. Like, I just was like, shit on. And it's like, oh no, that's like horror. And this was in my early 20s, and that was like in Chicago. Chicago's so fucked up too, because it's like segregated. But
it's
then
the most segregated city I've ever been to.
And so it's extremely diverse, but everyone is like separate from each other. Everybody, and then when they get together, to it's like so fucked up. And so I did feel more liberty in Chicago to toe that line and to figure it out, because I was like, I'm the least racist person here. Like,
okay, right.
I'm figuring it out amongst crazy people. But yeah, you definitely learn. And then in light of this SNL thing that happened, I got to experience it through watching my fiance experience it. And he thought it was like, he's saying words I've never even heard. And I thought I'd heard them all. Like, what? Like, he's like, I was bullied my whole life
but they didn't go there.
For being Filipino. And he's like, I didn't, because he grew up in an all white town, basically.
Yeah.
And he's like, I didn't even know these. Like, and we had one opinion of what they should do.
Yeah.
And then he was like, no, I think they should do this. And we were like, no. Oh, yeah. If that's what you think, then
yeah.
All right. We're going to take a quick break here on Classic Black Dude. We got Megan Gailey. We're going to come back and talk more about interracial dating and just being grown up in the Midwest and more here on Classic Black Dude. Thank you. We'll be right back. We are back here with the Megan Gailey. Has an album coming out called My Dad Paid For It. My Dad Paid For This, or My Dad Paid For This.
But it's a double entendre.
Okay, break that down.
Because my dad has, you know, paid for my college and still pays for my cell phone bill, and, you know, has been very kind and supportive. But I also say mean and, like, kind of wild things about our family dynamic on stage. So he's paying for it in two different ways.
See, you smart and people don't even know. Like,
Thank you. You got that,
this is my Aquarius sister. Like,
yes.
We got that kind of subversive type of intelligence people don't even know. And because you're such a fun gal,
we're sneaky.
People don't even know that you hitting them with a double entendre. I'm excited to hear it. I've been watching 10 years.
Yeah.
Since I made
crazy.
can we delve into our history real quick. So, of course, like every black dude on the South Side, I had a little crush on Megan from her headshot. And I never shot a shot because I fucked myself up. Do you want to tell the story?
You told me. Well, I mean, if I'm going to tell the story, I have to tell the story accurately.
I was
seeing a man.
Yeah.
And we, I think, like, left a party that was at my house to go into my bedroom and have sex. And during that time, I took off my makeup. And so I took off my makeup, and then I had sex face, and I'm very fair skinned. I'm sure you can hear my voice.
Yeah.
And I do get a little bit of, you know, I call it potato famine cheek. You know, I'll look windblown even if I'm inside.
She said it, I did.
And so I came out, no makeup, fresh sex face. And you said, you look bad without makeup on.
She's not even like, this is how bad I am with women. Like, because that's exactly what I said. And I didn't even know I was saying something bad. You were just like,
that's what I think.
I'm just fucking naive. Like, I'm like Black Kramer. Like, I'll just say something because
What happens is, I don't think I've ever said anything like that to you before, right? So a lot of my relationships ended by me being perfect 95% mm-hmm. of the time, and then I'll say something like, you look bad without makeup. And I'm just thinking like, wait, I built up stock.
But that, I don't think that is like a relationship and a friendship ender.
It hasn't ended it, but it definitely put it, I had to make up for it, put it that way. Like, what I had done before that was because people, if I had opened with that,
mm-hmm.
then people go, oh, he has a tendency to say the worst thing he could say. But when you're not doing that, then people, it hits harder.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
With people, yeah, and I'm not even trying, I just say the first thing.
I mean, it just, that,
'cause I was on your couch, I woke up. It was a party, you know.
And you saw me, and you were frightened.
Like, this ain't the headshot.
You said, I don't even know if I should bring this up. You said something crazy to me when we lived in New York, too.
Will I get canceled?
You will not get canceled. Okay. No.
What did I say?
I've only recently started feeling comfortable about talking about this. So I had an abortion,
okay.
And I was. You know, you have to schedule it and then, like, wait.
Okay.
They don't let you, like, come in that day.
Oh,
and so,
I thought Planned Parenthood was, like, walk-in.
Well, listen, I was going to a free clinic on the Upper West Side.
Oh, shit.
Whenever people are like, oh, yeah, they got Obama free phones. I'm like, listen, he wasn't giving out free phones, but he was giving out free abortions.
Absolutely.
So I could probably get canceled.
Shout out to Obama.
It wasn't him personally. They were just, I was below making a certain amount.
You were new to New York.
And
right?
I was new to New York, and I wanted to find out, you know, what the city could offer me. And so I found out I was pregnant, and then I wasn't going to have the abortion for like 8 days.
Okay.
Because of work and schedule and blah, blah, blah. And I was a nanny at the time for a baby.
It was like
heartbreaking. It was really, really terrible and sad. And so I didn't drink or smoke weed at all during that, once I knew I was pregnant, to the abortion, because I was like, it feels wrong. And then the night before, I was like out with friends, and I just like broke. We were at the Mermaid Inn, and we just like broke. I broke down, and I, you know, it was really, I also felt sick. Like, I didn't feel
as pregnancy.
It was
has
a lot.
And
it was like a lot. And then I had a drink, and then I did feel better. And then we went to this like rooftop party, and people were drinking, and I like smoked part of a joint, and then I was high at this point. When I'm high, I'll say anything. And so I was like, I turned to you and I was like, I'm having an abortion tomorrow. And you were like, should you be smoking?
What is wrong with me?
I did not. I truly was just like, I mean, I guess, I don't know. And it did not upset me like at all. But when I was walking home with my then boyfriend, a different man than the first story.
Than the abortion too? Or this was the same guy?
This is different guy from Chicago. New guy.
But it was his.
It was his.
Oh, okay.
And I recounted this. And he was so mad at me for not being mad at you.
Really?
And I just was like, I don't
even know who this is.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, I know the guy, but
you can't.
I didn't know. People are always mad at me. I have no idea.
But I wasn't mad at you.
You weren't, but like,
I've honestly never ever been mad at you.
I don't think I've ever like. Yeah, we just you just get it. Like,
I do get it.
You,
I get
that
you.
That was kind of from the beginning. We've never had an issue.
I think my threshold is very high too, and you scoot in right underneath
just,
it. You
just
know,
like yeah.
It may cut off the top of your hair, but you skate in right underneath where my level of getting mad is.
I'll accept or I can forgive anything if it's genuine. You know why? Because anything that I've ever said to you, it was never like to intentionally hurt.
No, of course not.
So like if someone is racist and they're not trying to just, you know,
mm-hmm.
poke at something,
mm-hmm.
then it's like, oh, you're just dumb. You're not
malicious.
An idiot, right. You're not trying to, you're not trying to
do it. I think that's something that comes with age too, is that like I was very sensitive, and you know, I'm still sensitive, but I do now like take what people say, and I'm like, did this have malicious intent? And if it didn't, right, then you got to just keep going.
Most of the time, most things really fly over my head because someone could say something. I'm usually not paying attention to what I'm thinking about.
Yourself. My own things. You're in your own shit.
I'm in my own and what I got to do next. And because I'm really uncomfortable in small social circles with strangers.
Yeah.
I'm not great at networking. So, like, people will see me out, and I'm talking to people.
I can't wait to see you at the wedding.
Yeah. It's going. You know what? But if I hit it off with somebody, I'll talk to them all night. So, like, people are like, oh, man, you be networking your ass. I'm like, no, I'm talking to the same people over and over. It's like the cartoon.
Because then you get comfortable with them, and so then they're sort of your touchstone of like, oh, well, that friend went away, but you know who? Mary is here, and I can go to her.
Except when the Jameson hits me, oh, I could talk to anybody.
That's good.
Is that your go-to?
No. What's your go-to? I'm a vodka.
Really?
Yeah.
I started on vodka. It made me sick.
Well, and people are so rude about vodka. Like, I didn't realize this until recently that's like vodka's so looked down upon.
It's really.
I like it.
Especially with the younger comics and the kind of the just the newer. I hate it. Whatever I want to drink, let me drink.
Yeah. I mean, I like wine. Well, I drink whiskey. Absolutely. I feel like it's like my birthright.
Yeah.
But
as an Irish Catholic.
But it's
Catholic? You grew up in church?
My mom Catholic and my dad Protestant.
Which is a to your joke.
Yeah, it is. But we were, I mean, when they got married, they were married in a Catholic church. My dad had to sign something that said he would not try and trick us into becoming Protestant.
Get the fuck out.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so we were raised Catholic. I actually did not know that my dad wasn't Catholic until I was a teen, because he sang in the Catholic church choir. I mean, he went to church more than any of us, because he's a performer.
Right.
And he wanted to be up there.
He wanted to, the spotlight.
But then we moved, my mom and dad and I lived in Belfast, and he really became Protestant when we were over there.
This is a two-for-one funny story with Megan. One time, when she still had the Saturn, we did a gig at Walter Payton Steakhouse, which is like 40 minute drive.
I don't even know if I remember this.
Well, okay, three funny stories with that. So Megan gave me my first 5-hour energy drink. That was the first thing.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first thing.
Yes, yeah. That was in like a barn?
No. But on the way there, stopped at the 7-Eleven.
Yes.
And I had just always been like, oh man, those are kind of 5-hour in. That's scary. So I was like, do those work? She was like, yeah. And I took one because I had to headline and I did like 30 minutes. And that was my first time doing that long. And I was just like, all right, I'll try one. And when I was Def Comedy Jam.
In like.
I went nuts for 30
fucking
minutes.
In like Gurney.
And like, but like,
in
it
a
was,
place that was not ready.
Act outs. I was talking shit about the cooking staff. It was just a spectacle. And I got to find that video somewhere. So that's story number one.
I also drank a 5-hour energy and I was crazy too.
It was just like, who are these Chicago fucking lunatics coming here telling jokes? So that's crazy story part number one. Number two, while we're driving, I'm in the passenger seat. Megan's driving and we're in, I don't know where Walter Brown's Roundhouse, but you can imagine the city with a name like that. And we pull up, and it's a black dude in the truck next to us. He looks down at me and just gives me the thumbs up after looking at Megan. It was like, hey, go ahead, brother. So that was dope. Third, so I'm diabetic. And I'm type 1, so I take, I take the shots. And this was at the start of like wearing skinny jeans. So like one of my syringes fell out in the back seat and Megan's mom found it.
Yeah.
And I forget, what did she say to you?
She was like, what is this? And I'm like, my friend is diabetic. Sounds like the perfect cover. My friend Clark is diabetic. And we were on our way to Walter Payton Steakhouse. But yeah, she thought I was shooting up in my car.
Hilarious. It was just, these are the types, and I'm sure it's more.
We had fun times.
It was one time I was hosting, you were featuring at Red Bar, and the headliner kept asking, so y'all fucking, right? And I'm just like, no. People just see the optics, and they're like, oh, that's the type of, because people assume, and people make assumptions about
black dudes and white women, as you might have heard, mm-hmm. that black men like a certain type of, which was kind of an insult to Megan, because it's kind of, you know what I mean? Like, it's saying, like, you're a certain thing.
It wasn't untrue.
It wasn't untrue. You know what I mean? And, like, that's happened on many occasions. Up in Boys Town, same thing happened where, like, a gay dude, Boys Town, Chicago is a gay neighborhood, Lakeview. A dude would not leave me alone until I admitted that I was having sex with Megan. And I'm just like, I'm not. I think he just wanted to talk to me. I don't know.
This happened in high school. I went to dances with black guys. I went to dances with white guys. Like, I definitely had, there were definitely black guys that I hooked up with.
Yeah.
And then I got to college and I was dating a black guy, and there would be like white guys that were in these fraternities that we would hang out with, yeah. and they'd be like, oh yeah, you're one of those, you know? And it was,
they
really
just put you into a category.
Yeah. And so I just was like, I just love everybody. Like, I, yeah. and it's not even like, I don't see color. I just was like, if you are into me, I'm yeah. gonna be into you.
You see dudes as dudes. Like, white, whatever. I've never, yeah, CJ's Filipino.
White woman, Asian man, people are like, they like cannot, they do not understand. When we first started dating, dear, dear friends of mine from back home were like, so he's like really rich? And I was like, no.
Wait, is that white or is that you? Is that a Megan thing or is that a white woman thing?
They had never asked about my white boyfriends.
Okay.
And so, and I was just like, no, he's not.
Have you been with a black dude that disappointed in the,
Yeah.
And what was that like? Were you just like, whoa, what's this?
I had had enough that didn't, that I was like, listen, there's going to be some outliers.
Yeah.
But I did like feel bad for him, because I was like, if this was someone's only experience, they'd leave it going, guys, I got to let you know, I don't think it's true.
Yeah, that was like, yeah, you got to get back in there and just get at least some balance.
And like, there was part of me that was like, I want to talk to him about this and know, like, how has this been hard for you? Like, what is it like to feel like you don't live up to that stereotype dick-wise?
Once again, it's like the people who are trying to prove, the black guys from Diamond Head, where are you from?
Diamond Point is where Paul George lived.
Diamond Point black dudes, they have it the worst. Even going, I went to Morehouse and it was a lot of black dudes. Like, I didn't know vacation as a verb until I went to Morehouse, mm-hmm. right? Where like, dudes like, yeah, I'm vacationing.
We vacation
in Martha's Vineyard. Like, those types. So it's the whole spectrum. Right. So like, those guys are the ones who grew up in Gurnee, but they got to say Chicago because they're embarrassed. They have it hard because they don't identify with what's considered to be black enough. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So they have it pretty rough. I mean, even me, like, people assume, oh, you from the South Side of Chicago. You must have it. Like, nah, my mom pays for most. Like, and you can tell, I think people like you can tell that. It's the story isn't just he's from the South Side.
Oh, it's honestly like one of my greatest skills that I feel like I could say how much every single one of our comedian friends' parents make.
Yeah.
Like within 10 grand.
Or you can at least tell your mom supports you, or like your parents.
Yes.
You can tell whose comic parents support their dreams.
Because there's, and I think it happens with white men more than any other demo, of just like, they're presenting this blue collar and
right.
it's like, oh, I've been to your parents' home and this is like, I do try and be transparent. I think I almost overcompensate. Like, I'm like, my parents pay for it, and it's like, I've had a job since I was 15. So yes, my parents are very supportive and very kind. They've never paid my rent ever.
My mom has paid my rent.
Yeah, so
I'm
it's
more of a white woman than
but
you
I do
are.
A lot of like, my dad is rich, my dad is paying for me, but I'm like having fun and doing a little tongue-in-cheek, where there's people that are like, oh, I'm broke, and it's like, I know you are not
you
broke.
Are so not. This is a whole, the hoodie is a costume, so you can, this is what broke people dress like in your mind, right?
And I think it's to some extent like, oh, I have to be this way on stage for people to like me.
Yeah, whereas like, I'm not punching down because I'm broke.
I'm down.
It's hard because I watch friends of mine, like I watch like a friend like Kenny DeForest, who's a good like one of my best friends actually, who comes from money. I've just watched him have to create things that he can joke about,
mm-hmm.
right? Because everything is, well, you're punching down, and he's just had to, and I think it's made him better.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's made you better, and I think for white comics, it's an opportunity to say, this is how funny I am. All these things I can't joke about, and I found a way to still be funny,
mm-hmm.
right? We got a couple questions that I got from people. I opened up because I said Megan speaking on behalf of white women.
Oh, great.
But we're going to take a quick break here on Classic Black Dude. We'll be right back with the Megan Gailey. Got the album coming out. My dad paid for this. Make sure you pre-order. And yeah, we'll be right back.
I like this blankie.
Yeah, it's very soft,
nice,
right?
Nice, soft.
We are back here talking about our nice setup. Isn't this a nice studio? Were you surprised?
Really, I wasn't surprised because once an itinerary went out, I was like, oh. Because sometimes in like stand-up, you'll get like, we always say like the more emails, the worse the show's going to be.
Yeah.
But in podcasting, you actually like want emails because then you're like, oh, they'll be, once they're like, this is the engineer, you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Because I've recorded like 2-hour podcasts with people and then they're like, oh, my Zoom was out. And it's like, okay, well, I'm leaving.
Once a friend books me on a podcast and I get an email from somebody I don't know, then I'm like,
yeah,
oh, okay.
Oh, it's good.
Y'all got a whole thing happening.
Absolutely.
Here.
Yeah.
Because I've never met this person and they're booking me. One question we got was, I want to say today, it's another comedian, but it's about the kind of movement of, and this has been joked about a lot, white women disassociating themselves from white men
mm-hmm.
in this time of problematic behavior. Do you feel like that's true? Like, have you felt like you've had to call out white men yourself to say, I'm not them? Like, where do you stand on white women kind of acting like they're not a part of the problem?
I mean, we've obviously done that. I think we are like, we want to play both sides more than probably any group, because white men are very much like, no, we're good.
Yeah.
And we're like, you are good. But then we're also like, they're bad. And then I think like women of color are like, no, you guys are terrible.
All of you. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we are very much playing both sides. And mm-hmm. and it's, you know, we were joking today via text, 53% just like rings through us. And so it's like at our core, half of us are
over
still
half.
More than half are still really lost.
You think they'll do that again? You think it'll be a repeat? Has some of this shit gotten through?
I, like when people ask, like, did that surprise you? It did. It obviously did surprise me because I think of myself as a white woman from a red state who has never voted Republican ever in my life. And I can't imagine a world where I would. And my mom is the same way. And we are affluent, you know, like we're not there. We're voting against our self-interest. So that's why I was like, well, if I'm doing it and mm-hmm. I'm like a shitty person, I'm a selfish little slut.
Yeah.
How are they not doing it? But then when you factor in this ingrained misogyny.
Mm.
So I do think that we have benefited from white man's reign. Absolutely. Okay. I do think that we've also been brainwashed a little bit.
Okay.
To think that women are not reliable leaders or people that can like bring us into the next wave, because when you see people's reaction to Hillary and now you see it to Elizabeth Warren, it does feel like Elizabeth Warren has a lot more women on her side, but I think it's
they're
the same
coming around.
I think it's the same people that were on Hillary's side,
which is actually a tough sell because there was such a loyalty to Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
Like I couldn't even, I put out something saying like, all I was saying was, you know, when Hillary was at the, I got attacked because I was like, yo, white women that's supporting Hillary, don't fall asleep at the wheel like a lot of black people did with Barack. Whereas like Barack won and now we just like, oh, okay, everything's great.
We can coast.
And I got hit like hard, like you voted for Barack. And I'm just like, yeah, that's not what I'm saying.
You're right.
People aren't listening to what I'm saying. Don't make the same mistake, but you just, so the fact that they're even coming around again, which is, I don't know. We don't even have a candidate.
I know. I mean, I guess I haven't really answered that question. I do think that we trash white men.
Yeah.
I also think unless you're a comedian, it's really hard to say, oh, hey, here's my take on how we've also fucked up. You know, like I have that platform to be able to like acknowledge that and try and make a joke about like where my privilege comes from and all of the things I've benefited from. I can make jokes about my dad paying for my wedding while I'm mm-hmm. still mad at him about voting for Gary Johnson. You know, like that's something
that helped though. That almost fucked up the red side. Like people voted for Gary, at least, you know, took some of those Trump votes away. So in his
But I do think if you're not a comedian or a journalist and you're just like a white woman at home on Facebook, do I think it'd be beneficial for you to acknowledge it? Yeah. But like, I also think some of these people that live outside of the creative world don't have the tools to get to do that.
Right.
So they're just typing into the void and then going into work and being like, hey.
That's the crazy part too, though, because what I see is, and some, I forgot who talked about this, but it was like, there's a point for a long time where comedians feel like they're talking into a void. Then all of a sudden, they're a celebrity, and it's just like, wait, I'm not used to people actually listening to what I have to say. Like, I'm sure even with the Joker response, you were a little shocked, like, wait, I'm not used to this much vitriol coming back at me. That's wild.
And their most of their vitriol was that I had a blue check mark. And
I was
like, oh, that is so strange, because like a blue check mark is a new phenomenon. You know, like there hasn't been verification in life pre-Twitter, pre-Instagram, pre-social media.
Yeah.
So that is new. But then to also hate the people that have it and to point that your take is bad because you are a verified person
you're punching down on Joker fans.
That I was like, oh, this must be a new talking point that they're like finding a way to attack us
to
even when but like we have that because of we've reached a certain level of success in our career.
Yeah.
So shouldn't that make us not experts, but at least people worth listening to about media? I mean, no, I live in LA. I am a creative. I have worked on shows.
It means that I need. And when you actually respond that people put the guns away a little bit? Like, oh, I didn't expect you to. I think that happens with guys a lot. I think with women, when the trolls go after women, it's like to make a woman feel bad. But like most times, if I get a troll, it's. As soon as I respond, like in kind, most times
they're like, "Oh, I just wanted a conversation."
I was just
fucking around. Yeah. But not, no. Like that's why I respond very, very rarely. But when I do, I respond with insane bits.
Okay, it's all about keeping it jokey.
Yeah,
right.
Because then it's really like I don't know what to do. And when you're doing something truly insane as a bit, people can't say you're not funny because it's like, well, this is crazy.
With that, there's another question. So have you as a white woman ever worried about, do you ever worry about being canceled?
Or absolutely.
Like a part of the, for what?
I think that like we're living in a giant Black Mirror episode where we will all be canceled at some point.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of like where we fall in that spectrum.
Okay. Mary was very proud of that answer.
That's something I thought of when I was high. Of just
that's
like,
real.
Oh, you really just want to be at the end of the, because I do think cancel culture is sort of a myth. Because if you think of these people that have been canceled, it's like what really has happened to them.
Well, Louis lost $35 million and he won't let you forget it, or $53 million or
but
whatever.
He has plenty of million to live. Like he didn't lose everything.
I want a heckler to be like, how much you got now? And so he can say, oh, $200 million.
And it's also like he has a check mark. You know, like they very much pick and choose like who is the liberal elite and the media elite that can be trusted and can't.
Yeah.
But I think we all have to acknowledge that like at some point in our lives we've done something that we could get canceled for.
You just it's almost like a Chinese finger trap, because I just worked with the NFL on Fox.
Yeah.
And I know if I was more famous, I would get.
Yeah.
I got called a Sambo. That's the only thing that I'm like, lady, how old are you? Like, are you 80 years old? I got called a Sambo and a sellout by one woman. But I called her beautiful. That's how the situation
is.
And
I think that's like a fine way to, when I was at the NFL last year, and they would, the NFL, I would be a part of a tweet that they tweet. And so I would look through, and the mentions wouldn't be specific to me, but I was like, oh, both sides hate this. But they scrubbed my Twitter, but they scrubbed my Twitter of stuff that.
Now, when you say scrub, is that them checking it, or is them actually saying, take this down?
I mean,
what does scrub mean?
I think I was presented with
some
a list of tweets.
Okay, I'm not saying you did them
all. And the thing is, these tweets were anti certain NFL players. You know, like I had
their business.
It wasn't. It was like I had a tweet that was when Mike Pence left the Colts game. That triggered me in a way that was. And then I was on a 6-hour flight delay.
Yeah.
And so I was just like walking around the Sacramento airport, tweeting. Like,
I remember
people
your
were
Pence
reaching
stuff,
out to me, being like, Megan, you gotta put the phone down. Like, and so I tweeted Mike Pence as a little bitch boy, hashtag Colts. And the NFL was like, can you take that down? I'm like, this is pro Colts.
I wish you could edit tweets. That would change the game, but, you know, people still have screen grabs that come back to haunt you, as we've seen with friends of ours.
Yeah,
it's kind of wild.
And I have been with friends when that has happened to them, and so it very much makes you. And the thing is, when you delete a tweet, you also need to read it and say, at some point, I thought this was appropriate.
Right.
And I need to realize where I've come, and if I haven't come anywhere from that, then I need to grow from it. It can't just be like, get over all this.
Never happened. What tweet?
No, it's like you really do have to. And so I went through this thing of like Google it, or, you know, in the Twitter search, I would write my name and then, the six, you know, the Carlin words. And, and I was actually like pleasantly proud of myself.
Like, oh, shit. I did make an ass of
myself
publicly.
I'm like, listen, I was like really mad at an Asian man in a yellow car day.
It's, you know, let me just say, look, it was for a long time. The Asians, I never have done that publicly, but I have publicly, but it was just because Asian people that I've known have taken it in such stride that people had a false understanding of like, oh, they're cool with it, right? And it's not to, it's your own fault, or it's my own fault, or whoever's own fault for not delving deeper, but just going like with the, it's like when you ask one black person, can I say
this
word?
Okay?
Is this
okay?
And they go, yeah. And you know it's the person who's going to say, yeah, it's cool. It's a cop-out.
I also
right?
think with Asian people, there is like a misconception that they're all rich. And so it felt less like punching down and just like, oh, I'm just like, they're rich. They don't care about me. And it's like, no, I mean, that's not every Asian person in the world. Actually, probably the largest population of impoverished people is Asian, just because they make up.
Is Andrew still here? Oh, hey, man. Andrew's our producer, and we always go to Asian somehow on the podcast. One time, he gonna come in and sit in.
And just be like, enough!
Yeah, okay, for the Asian segment here on Classic Black Dude, Andrew!
But it's like, you know, I definitely had to, I'm marrying an Asian man.
Filipino?
And I think even within Asian culture, like, Filipinos feel discriminated against by other Asians.
They get the double. Because, as you said, they're the black people of Asian people. Or did he say that?
I think he says they're the
I think you agree.
He would say the Hispanic. They're the Mexicans of Asian people.
Absolutely.
I don't feel that way. I think they're incredibly.
She looked into the camera.
And he's like, I'm. But like, but and so then, I mean, and that happens when, I mean, in the black community, there's skin color, and
it's
so
how
like,
much money you got.
Yes.
You know your dad. Like,
so even within every, like, when you're just targeting a whole group, even within that group, they have, I mean, in white people, there's white trash. And like, I feel,
absolutely.
I say, if I think someone is unintelligent, I will call them trash. And it's like, that is very hurtful to a large group of people.
The dumb people don't like that.
Who were raised feeling like they were white trash and that people didn't want to go hang out with them.
Shit. All right, we got time for one question, one more question that was brought to me, and then we're going to do a little classic black dude pyramid where Megan is going to,
we're
going to
join a pyramid scheme?
Yeah. This is why I brought you here.
I mean, we're definitely at the top of that food chain.
Oh, yeah. I've been invited to many Starbucks meetups just to see if I want to sell knives out of
knives.
A suitcase.
Knives, oh, yeah.
What have you learned about people, and you can be specific or broad, from interracial dating? Because you got a nice little spectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah. What have you learned about Black people, Filipinos, like poor white people?
I guess
what's some things you learned?
I think what interracial, like what the couple's made up of, matters to people. Okay. I used to, like, when CJ and I first started dating, and we're grown-ups, you know, we started dating when we were over 30. So it's not like, right, we're not going through like a phase or a fad. It's like, well, this is the person I love, yeah, yeah, and he happens to be, and I'm the person he loves, and it happens to be. And it actually felt, you know, we lived in LA, and it was like, oh, this is like fine, and no one really cares.
Nobody gives a shit.
And then we went to Florida, mm-hmm, like pretty early in our relationship, because I had shows.
What part of Florida?
We were in West Palm Beach.
Oh, okay.
And that does matter.
That matters.
And after like 3 days, I was like, are people mad at, like, an older man just shook his head at us. And CJ was like, yeah. And like, he was much more aware of it.
Yeah.
And it took me a second. And part of that is because I really wasn't looking for it. Like, it would absolutely happen when I was in high school and college and had Black guys that I was dating. And it would happen from like, friends' parents would say crazy things to me. Mm-hmm. And so that was one I was like more aware of. And it was obviously very sad, but yeah. I was like, you guys are sad. Like, you're dumb. But my family, one of our dearest friends is a white woman and a Black man. And I knew from a very young age that it was really, that there were places that they did not feel welcome to go.
Yeah.
So I was never naive to that one. I was obviously naive from what it felt like to be the Black person in the situation, but to be the white person in the couple, I knew how people felt, for good and for bad. Like, you know, there were some people that would be like, awesome, great.
It's a weird kind of phenomenon. I lived in Brooklyn for 5 years,
yeah.
And if you've been to Brooklyn lately, you would understand. Oh, Clark's probably dated a lot of Jewish women, a lot of white women.
Yeah,
it's just what was around, right? So, like, even with people, I think sometimes when they have these stereotypes, if they just on sight, just looking at you too, like, yes, they are dumb for having those feelings, but they're also smart because they know. They're thinking about how the world is.
Mm-hmm.
And they think about Walmart Saturdays with their friends. And it's just like, you shouldn't do that because this is how you're going to be treated by the real, real bad people. So they're more aware because they see every time they hang out with their friends how those people talk. And this is the sheriff that they hang around. And this is hiring managers and all these people that really are open and honest with them. So, like, even if they, like, my mom doesn't care, but I have other people who care because they're like, oh, this is how white people going to act towards you.
Mm-hmm.
So they are ignorant. I will say that, because they don't know that everybody doesn't act like that to a certain degree, right?
So. And I think you can be aware that people are going to act that way and also be like, that's fucked up that you're gonna act that way. When we went to Hawaii, it was because like CJ has gone on a family vacation with my white family, and a guy trying to hit on me asked if CJ was my driver, which is so weird too, because it's like, you think I'm gonna have sex with you now? Yeah, I'm like, he's in custom LeBrons, and like, who would fly their driver to a resort where there's no cars? Like, I mean, he obviously didn't think he was my driver. He was being racist.
Yeah.
And then we went to Hawaii, just CJ and me, and he's like, man, it's awesome here. Like, he was like, I look like everybody here for the first time in my life.
It's, oh my God.
Because even when we lived in Eagle Rock, which is a Filipino neighborhood in LA,
they have Filipino churches.
There's still like white people. In Hawaii, it's like, no, you guys are the coolest and the hottest and the best. And like, we've stolen things from you, but they are the native people. And he looks enough like Hawaiian people that he felt so like comfortable and at ease. And he was like, man, it was cool because like guys were looking at me and giving me like fist bumps that I was like with a white. And he's like, that's never happened to me ever. I've never felt like I was the majority and that my dating was like a point of privilege and cool ever.
It's such a, if I had to be not envious, but just the feeling that white people have, most places in America, you can go around and see. It's something about seeing yourself around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going to a black college is more of just about like, man, I just need to be around
yeah.
this thing, even though we have these differences because of whatever socioeconomic. Just seeing black faces, I have a higher percentage of being able to relate to people in this room. I also think like it's dope that y'all are both from the Midwest, because somebody told me beyond race, growing up in the same area
mm-hmm.
can make, because you just understand the politics
yeah.
the same way of the way that the world works. So like a black woman and a white woman who are both from Seattle, both from the South, they have just an understanding of the outlook of the world than someone from New York and someone from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, man, this is quick. This is an hour we just did.
I breezed through.
And we did you anything that we didn't touch on that you want to talk about before we get into our pyramid?
I mean, I do think when they say like all the white women that were at the Me Too March, we need to go to the Black Lives Matter March. We do.
With the pink hats.
With the pussy hats. Bring your pussy hat.
Bring your pussy hat and your fists and just raise them up.
My mom is that woman. She's going to all the marches.
I love your mom.
She wants to march. She's like, I'm at a gun march. I'm at an anti-gun march. I'm at a women's right march. I'm at a Black Lives Matter march. I'm like, you are just in your Kate Spade lemon pants.
She's just a
going
darling.
Everywhere.
Man, she hugged me the first time I ever met her in New York at the open mic. And I love your family. Great family. All right, so classic black pyramid. We're gonna do like 3 minutes, right? In 3 minutes,
okay.
2 minutes, just to raise the stakes.
Oh, no.
I'll try to name some things. You tell me what I'm talking about, but I can't name the thing.
Okay.
So it's movies,
okay.
People.
Who I hope I'm good at this.
Maybe events. All right, okay. Let's see if
actually,
we.
I think I'll be pretty good.
I think you'll be good. Let's see if we can get 10.
Okay.
All right. So Clark starts now. First one. Oh, this former athlete was named Primetime.
Deion?
Deion
Sanders.
Okay, that's one. Okay, this guy attended Morehouse College. He gave the I Have a Dream speech.
Martin Luther King Jr.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., very good. Okay, this actor was in the movie Love Jones. And he also played Frankie Lyman in a movie. He also is from Chicago. He is on the show Power right now.
50 Cent?
No,
close. Forrest Whitaker?
Not Forrest Whitaker. Okay, we got to move on.
Oh, okay.
Or unless you want to do one more guess?
No.
Okay, we'll move on. Okay, this event in Atlanta was hot during the 90s. And it was where the whole city would come out and we would party in the streets at
the Summer Olympics.
It was during that time too. It starts with an F. Freaknik is what we were looking for.
Freaknik. Yeah. I honestly thought it was freak, and I was like, I don't feel like I can say Freaknik and then be wrong.
It's scary to be wrong.
Yeah. But I was about to be like Peachtree Street.
That's close.
Okay.
Okay. This guy was the first African American mayor of Chicago. He died of a heart attack.
Washington.
What's the first
name? Harold Washington.
Harold Washington.
Yeah.
The library.
Yeah,
yes.
The library.
Okay. This is the wife of Barack Obama.
Michelle Obama.
Hey, very good. This actor was in a movie Coneheads. He's a comedian. Started in the late 80s. He was on a show called A Different World. He had brown hair. He's tall. He also hosted The Vibe Show. He goes by one name. Comedian, tall, light skin. He was also on The Rail Show. Sinbad.
Oh, Sinbad.
Damn.
Who was he in Coneheads? Coneheads was really throwing me off. Oh, he's like the boss. Is he his boss?
He worked at the little junkyard.
Coneheads.
If you want to learn about immigration, see Coneheads.
Coneheads right. is so, the big phone.
Everything.
It's so good. Eats a Subway sandwich. Also, an incredible Chris Farley performance.
Incredible early Adam Sandler performance.
So good.
Figure.
And David Spade's great in it.
That might be the best SNL movie.
I love that
movie. Well, that's been our show today.
Make sure.
Wait, who was the...
Lorenz Tate.
I wouldn't have gotten that.
Nope, not in a million years.
You know, you got to know the limits of your own knowledge.
You got five. You got Dion quick.
That well, was good. I mean, Dion has watched me eat food before.
That's it. Did he smile the whole time?
No, but okay, once I was like, I eat chicken wings in a way that's like, my parents are from they're from by Buffalo. I was taught like, you don't leave a speck of meat on that bone, you know? So I'm sucking it and I'm eating it in a disgusting fashion in full hair and
devouring.
Makeup. I literally have the chicken wing all the way in my mouth and I'm pulling it out and I looked up and LaDainian Tomlinson was just staring at me.
That's crazy.
And I'm like, I'm sorry. I think maybe he was impressed.
I think that last 3 minutes is all the Megan Gailey that you need to go get that album. My dad paid for this. Make sure you listen to this. Like, subscribe, comment everywhere that you can find podcasts. You're on a podcast.
Hysteria.
Yeah, tell us where we can find you.
It's on Crooked.
Yep.
Media. And then my Instagram is Better Megan Gailey. There was a Megan Gailey and I had to let her know
that you're better.
What was going on. And now I actually have Megan Gailey, but I don't want to use it. And then my Twitter is just Megan Gailey.
There it is. Thank you so much to our guests. And make sure you like, subscribe, comment to Classic Black Dude on all the social medias. Follow me at The Clark Jones. And another dope one in the bank.
Go Bears?
Go Bears.
Go Colts.
Yeah.